Welcome back to the Urban Vibe podcast. I am Vic.
And I'm Allison.
And this week we are going to be discussing the Banned Books Week. Banned books mean a lot to us as college students and in academic settings. The removal of certain titles can be puzzling sometimes, but this week we are going to focus on uplifting our librarians and anybody who's ever had a hand in promoting reading, literature, critical thinking skills. That is so important in the times we live in, and I think it's a very important thing we all kind of think about in the back of our heads, since Iowa itself can be a little bit controversial when it comes to book banning. But the first thing we'd like to talk about is George Takei being the honorary chair of the Banned Books Week. That is pretty cool. Have you had any experience while growing up with George?
I would say I'm most familiar with his role in Star Trek, and also his role, I think, in the shape that Star Trek took. It doesn't really relate a whole lot to, I guess it doesn't relate too much to literature, but in a lot of ways it does. I'm not as familiar with his writing, but I am quite aware of his presence at universities, at his speeches he's given, and of the values that he follows. I think he's somebody with a really fascinating story, and I guess he's been a part of something which is somewhat important to me, so.
That is very cool. I did not know for the longest time that he was a member of the LGBTQ+. I grew up watching science fiction. I read science fiction. I really, really appreciate the genre, so I did grow up on things like Star Trek and so on. But finding out that he was part of my community was very cool. A lot of us don't make it to be that old, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, George, if you're listening, I don't mean it negatively. I'm just saying that is such a cool position to be in, and he's worked very, very hard to be there with everything that he's gone through.
And I think, like to me, I almost can't even imagine Star Trek without, you know, San Francisco. That's where everything happened. That's where all the pieces came together. And in the world of Star Trek, San Francisco is really the hub city, which the whole Federation, like, operates around. It's the headquarters. San Francisco is it's a really fascinating place, especially around that time period when Star Trek was first coming around. It was a place that really broke some ground, and it's not everything that happened at that time, I think, is looked back upon fondly, but there were some really incredible minds that were able to come together and create something new, and to, I guess, bring together all sorts of people who weren't accepted in mainstream society to I guess help shape what they saw. I think that some of that absolutely involves literature, but I don't know. I think all in all, I'm not all too aware of George Takei's impact on literature. I would like to hear more.
This year, what they are focusing on is he wrote a graphic novel called They Called Us Enemy, and it's about his time being in the
internment camps.
In the internment camps in America back during the war, and he goes over the kinds of things that he experienced during it, and I think that is very, very important because a lot of people gloss over the fact that we had, like, these are concentration camps. You can call them concentration camps, internment camps, prison camps, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. These people were still stolen from their houses and carted off to, now we know, but back then we didn't know. And that was here. Mm-hmm. So I think the few places that has been banned, which I believe, if the report I'm looking at is correct, is Tennessee and Pennsylvania. Those are just two of the places it's been banned. Then kids may not get that information. And if they do, it's right out of the textbook. How many paragraphs would that be? During the war, America made the bad decision to do this, so be racist and then put these people in concentration camps. And then that gets glossed over because you have a test about it and then you never think about it again.
Yeah.
Right now, I think more than ever, with the presence of maybe people doing nefarious things, potentially, with members of our community, especially members of a community in Des Moines, that book is valuable and it should be circulated.
And I think there can be good intentions behind trying to protect children, but trying to protect children from history is not in their best interest.
They'll find out.
Because they're going to either, like, if they remain ignorant to history, then they will be victims of things which they do not understand.
Absolutely.
Of aspects of the world which
taking books away, they aren't ready for.
And I think, yes, I think if we can't look back at history and we can't learn from our mistakes, we're going to repeat them. And I think nonfiction books especially, I think a book that comes to my mind is The Diary of a Young Girl, which I have no, I just can't even process that book would be targeted. It's all nonfiction. It's all just the account of, I mean, someone probably the age of the reader, assuming it's in a school setting. And I would say the way that it's been targeted doesn't seem to me to be for the protection of children from violence or from persecution or from concepts that will ultimately hurt them. It's from concepts that it would probably hurt them not to learn about.
I think a good example of that is certain places have banned Lord of the Flies. To me, that was really surprising because when I was a kid, that was curriculum. It wasn't something you could just pick up at the library and then go home to read for fun. It was our middle school curriculum. It was part of it, along with Hatchet, which was about a boy who goes down in an airplane crash in Canada.
Yeah,
and has to survive by himself.
I think that
very important. I'm sorry. Yeah,
another
very
banned
book. Intense book. That's all I was trying to say.
Another book that's kind of similarly banned has been like work by Jack London, such as Call of the Wild, and I think what like that book to me. It's a little bit brutal, but like it's ultimately I think challenged more so because of the questions it raises ideologically and about just the purpose of people and about the questions about society. It's a book that I think maybe shows a way that survival is kind of maybe the purest purpose that any living creature has, and the expectations of society can kind of they can drive people away from. It's an allegory, of course. It's an animal, but I think sometimes we get put in houses and put in jobs and put in places, and sometimes we can't even wrap our minds around, like, the kinds of living that we do.
That's another important reason why access to books is that important. Because if you are the kind of person that is kind of stuck at the moment in the cycle of being a human, which is you get up in the morning and you go to work and then you come home and hopefully you have a couple hours to do this or that before you go to bed. But if you have kids, then you got to do the kid thing. And if you don't have kids, you have a second job because you have to be able to afford to live and make rent and feed yourself and so on. Books do also offer that moment of escape in a way. Instead of you flying to Alaska and going through the woods and or getting trapped like that little boy did, you get to read a book, and then you get to go to bed, and then you get to make it to work in the morning. So I think that is just another chance that books gives us, is that little bit of peace, even if we're hanging out with somebody else, or we're hanging out with their friends through that storyline. I think it, like I said earlier, books are tools, and I think that's also another way tools can be used.
Yeah, I think that a big reason that books have been targeted more so than anything in history is because books are capable of taking our mind somewhere abstract and letting us form ideas for ourselves. And it's not that film can't do that. It's not that that artwork can't do that. It absolutely has. But I think books scare the people in power in a way that I don't think is matched by really any other medium. Just because they are pure thought, they are pure idea and concept, especially fiction, is it's just particularly well, it can be written with the intention to make you question your reality, to make you question the way that you see the world. And I think oftentimes that is a book with that that characteristic is the type of book which is most likely to be banned. It doesn't necessarily correlate to to the content of the book, because I think oftentimes authors are challenged just by being the author. That, I mean, it doesn't even have to do anything with the book. An example I'm thinking of is Shel Silverstein. Now, he's got several books. Some of them are just poetry collections. And, well, I know here in Iowa, some of his books were banned in schools because Shel Silverstein was unwilling to fight in the Vietnam War. And that is a reasoning which doesn't even mention content. It doesn't even try to make the case that it's for our children's safety or anything. It's trying to make an appeal about the character of the author, which I don't know if that's a valid reason to criticize a book. I think ultimately, if you only read books that are from people that you absolutely agree with, and you absolutely respect, maybe you aren't going to read for the purpose of understanding or empathizing or learning about another person's way of being. I think trying to take away books based on what a person did outside of the book, it can be good for, you know, a good reason. It can be to keep this person from being an idol or something that, that people look up to. But I don't think that that's really doing all too much for children's safety or for any purpose that may be a reasonable argument for banning something or for waiting until a kid is a little older. There are a lot of times when books are banned for reasons that hardly make an appeal at all. They just get challenged because people don't like them.
Ironically, it also, finding yourself on a banned books list also kind of does the whole internet thing, right? If you ask something to be taken off the internet, now it's everywhere. A couple of titles that I always see being brought up that probably wouldn't be so popular and wouldn't be so mainstream if it wasn't for Banned Books Week would be Looking for Alaska by John Green. The only people that read that book were John Green fans. It wasn't a widely circulated book except for a couple of years. And it's been over 10 years now that I think that it's been mm-hmm. put out and published. If it wasn't banned, less kids would have read that book. 1984, it got banned from curriculum. What's the first thing a high schooler does when they find out that they can't do something? They go out and they do it. So you banning 1984, if you ban Animal Farm, if you ban, I think there was this book called Furnace that was really good. These kids are getting their hands on it because you said don't do that, which is very ironic to me. I just wanted to bring that up.
I think reverse psychology is just an interesting argument about anything. But I think with banned book, it's a kind of irony.
Yeah, it is ironic in a large sense, especially since we live in America and the middle of America. We're mm-hmm. kind of in the middle, like almost like the heart. And to see that, like, the First Amendment getting kind of smaller and smaller and smaller because parents don't like their kids reading Where the Wild Things Are, I think has a bigger impact than they think. So if you are somehow listening to this and you are somebody who is supporting Moms of Liberty, any
I don't think we need to call out anybody in particular, but I think specifically they
go out there and they're kind of like rude about it. I've met them in person. Like,
okay, what I want to say is we're not coming against you for who you organize with or what you relate to. I'm somebody who actually when we were coming up with this podcast, I was on the other side. We were coming from this as almost more of an argumentative type of podcast. I think there are a lot of valid reasons out there. But what I mean to say, and what I think my message would be, is really that not only by taking it too far is it going to be a wave of a chain reaction that will ultimately go against all literature, will go against all information and education. Once it starts, it won't stop. Not only that, as we said, the effect of banning something in some ways makes it more appealing. Banning something that deserves it
What I was trying to say is look for the consequences later on, because the things that are happening in Iowa right now is largely anti-LGBTQ+, which affects me personally, but also my children. Or I've also seen rumblings about anti-interracial dating slash marriage, about taking books off the shelves for that. That's why I specifically called them out. I was trying to mostly be like, I need you to reconsider, because once we're done getting rid of the LGBTQ literature, once we're done getting rid of any literature involving an interracial couple like me,
I think we've got the same point here.
Yeah, what's next?
What's right? next? Yeah, this is a chain next? Reaction.
And it is unfortunate that I think a lot of parents are being put into this situation where they may agree that a book is inappropriate for their child, but they do not agree about that about every single child. Because something that people don't like to talk about when it comes to books being in public access is, like, a librarian who it should be your best friend if you're in academia at all, right? They are some of the biggest assets you can have. They know what is appropriate for the age group that they are supporting. So if you have a kindergarten through five librarian, they are going to make sure that library is appropriate for those students. And I think we should give trust back to them. I think for the last 10 years, there's been like kind of this, well, number one, libraries have became less and less popular, especially because of streaming sites and so on, and YouTube and online media.
I think that the backlash to libraries has existed for a long time. Oh, it's just definitely. Picked up. It's just picked up more steam in the mainstream.
Absolutely. For the last 10 years, yes. I feel like they've very much been hit. And those are people that have devoted their lives to helping you and your students, mm-hmm. or your kids, or the community. Like, that's a service job. And libraries are just cool. I think a lot of libraries, I don't know what additions we have on the downtown public library. I know that if you go to the DMACC library, they can help you figure out any resource in DMACC. But if you go to the actual downtown public of Des Moines situation, sometimes you can do things like rent 3D printers, rent photography cameras. In some libraries, other places, you can rent appliances. These are definitely places that help marginalized people, especially. I've seen in libraries people sit down with people like ELL learners.
Well, and that's a big reason why I think people don't like them.
Yeah, they're very, very helpful. And I think that banning books is just another thing that they have to fight against. So if we all could just, as a consideration, instead of banning literature, take a good look at our child's curriculum before they enter the curriculum, and then decide if that's for them or not for personal reasons. Instead of banning books for every kid, just have a tighter hold of what your kid's doing, because that's really, it just comes down to parenting. If you're a parent and you see your kid reading a book you don't want them to read, you don't cry about it to the librarian. You take that book and you parent. And you go, I can't let you read this for A, B, and C. But let's revisit this book in a couple of years. Too many people have let their kids, like, just do whatever they want, I think, which is controversial. That's not the librarian's fault. If you told your kid he can't read Harry Potter, and then he brings home a copy of Harry Potter, that's not because the librarian was like, you're going to be a wizard, kid. Like, that's... They don't know what you got going on. Just have the conversation. And DMACC has a lot of kids' books circulating right now for Banned Books Week, like Why the Wild Things Are. If you consider The Diary of a Young Girl, the Anne Frank Diary, a kid's book. I read it as a kid. Maybe not other kids are ready for that, and that's okay. That's the point, right? We have copies of that, Hunger Games, Looking for Alaska. Is 13 Reasons Why considered a kid's novel? I think so.
I would say that I think it does appeal to the young adult crowd in a lot of ways, but I don't think that it...
I'm just trying to think
that, like, 13 Reasons Why being considered a kid's book is honestly the main reason why I think I struggle with it. As thinking of it as it's a good thing. I definitely think it brings up some questions about
So maybe a book for parents to be involved with their kids while they're reading. If they do have a copy of that, mm-hmm. somehow, maybe they just need to sit there and be with them.
I think...
there are some pretty dark messages in that.
I don't know if that's necessarily the best example for making the point that you wish to.
I think that's one that I would probably...
I understand. I think a lot of books that are reasonably banned, that I would agree with banning, are great books. And a lot of them actually have great messages. I just think that there needs to be a reasonable amount of discretion in reading them. I think, honestly, if a parent was able to have a conversation with their kid about something that's on their mind, something that's bothered them... they could turn a conversation about a book that they weren't ready for into a really great learning opportunity. You know, if your kid read a book like Lolita, or your kid read a book like
1984?
No, read a book like Catcher in the Rye, or a book like A Clockwork Orange. Books with protagonists with a questionable,
Protagonist?
Yes, I would say those are books that can put you in the shoes of somebody who has a dark mind, but those books can show us quite a bit. I think that they are something that even a kid could learn from, assuming that they had somebody to talk about it with that was going to be helpful.
I think there's an actual name for this, that people at the National American Library Association and all the people that are really into books on a academic level, I think they call those windows. I have seen mm-hmm. quite a lot of talk about this.
Yeah.
And the windows is the really big thing with the Banned Books Week, because if we take George Takei's off the market, if we take the Hunger Games, Suzanne Collins's Hunger Games off the market, if you take those off, those windows close for a lot of people. Because even if you sit there and you ban books from a school setting, right, and I will never advocate for explicit sex, drugs, and alcohol being in my students' curriculum. I'm never going to do that. But I think the mere mention of those things does not make that whole book about that. And I think a lot of these titles, they're there's violence, so my kid can't read it. There's sex, so my kids can't read it. But a lot of it is just something that you would not actually be able to put on paper. It's kind of just small mentions. It's not like these kids are out here reading terribly explicit material. But if you take them from the school setting, then you have this gap of those windows, especially if it's popular books, mm-hmm. because the connections that kids could have made with other connections also goes away. So for me, I read a book about, I think it was called Uncharted, but I'm not completely sure now, all these years later. It was a trilogy about a woman who was pressured into marrying a certain person, but instead, it was a dystopian magical novel, but instead she ran away in bubbles. I was a weird kid and no one ever talked to me, but when I read that book and there was two or three other people in my K through 12 elementary, high school, middle school situation, I actually got to talk to somebody, mm-hmm. for the first time. At the same time, the first time I'd ever seen LGBTQ people in real life and not, a movie making fun of gayness. You know, the, like in 2006, calling something gay was like the funniest thing in the world.
Yeah, I feel like the way most people of that time period heard about trans people was like How I Met Your Mother, which is really funny because I find it funny as far as like irony because of Neil Patrick Harris being a gay person and, you know, having to have like his whole joke in that show. I'm sorry. That's a tangent.
No, it's okay. I get what you're saying.
I think a lot of this, a lot of how I feel about all of this is just like, there's a lot of like, just irony.
Well, that's my thing, right? So LGBTQ people in the media have always been villainized, like literally villainized. They are the villains. Like if you look in like Disney movies and if you look in like actual horror movies, think of like The Silence of the Lambs. A lot of that stuff, like, comes back to, like, us. And I've never understood why they couldn't just get over it and write about something else. Fiction is so open. I don't know why there's so many movies that trend in that way. But what I was saying is if you take the access away from the schools, in places they don't have a public library, in places that don't have books maybe at all, because maybe it's all digital now, and digital books are way easier to move around and literally delete and literally just lock. So, you know, you can't have this person read it. You can't have this person read it. You can do that on a digital interface. You end up in that category we were discussing earlier with the dominoes falling. Mm-hmm. And if we have a society, let that happen, the dominoes will fall. And it's just a matter of time to see when they fall on us. And I think that's really ironic for me to say personally, because the dominoes have already fallen on me.
Yeah.
They've already fallen on me. And now I'm looking around going, they banned that book because of me. Mm-hmm. They banned that one because of somebody like my kid. I come from a blended family. I have a stepson who's Salvadorian. I have people that... like the Gaza book you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of time before it starts popping up on these lists as well, if it already hasn't.
I know that that book was, like, okay, I don't think that Eyeless in Gaza is necessarily one that kids need to read in school. I really like it, and I think that it's a great book, but, like, there are aspects of it. And also, like, I don't think that book is...
Do you know about the Bosnian War? I know this sounds so strange and random, but do you know about the Bosnian War? Just in general, Desert Storm?
Yeah, well, it was that whole area kind of was...
all doing something at some time, right?
Well, it was falling apart from the hold of Yugoslavia. It was all falling apart, right?
My dad was over there in Bosnia, and when he came back, my dad's a combat vet who was all messed up, but that doesn't matter. What matters is when I was a kid, I was about 7 or 8 years old, and I wish I could tell you the name of this book, but since I'm not looking it up right now, I can't. The Gaza thing reminded me of this. I read a book that he got me that was the diary of a Syrian kid who was going through a civil war, much like the Anne Frank one. This was not something my father was known to do, was to come and bring me diverse books in general. I don't even know where he picked it up at.
Yeah.
And it definitely wasn't for my age group. But it was the first time I had ever opened my eyes to war, like civil war. After reading the Anne Frank book, I did not understand still. And somehow through that book, I understood the horrors and how scared she was and how this little brown girl could be looked at through the media as the enemy when she was just huddled in her house. And I think that's probably very similar to anything written about Gaza, unless that was set during a time that there was peace. I mean, I don't know anything about the book that you...
No, Eyeless in Gaza is...
Is it
the name is actually a reference to it's a reference to a piece of poetry, which it's actually like a biblical story.
Oh, that's beautiful.
But I think it's really incredible how, like, all those biblical stories that take place there. And, you know, like...
We can talk back and forth about this all day, about the specifics. But I think what would be best for DMAC students, faculty, and staff is to go ahead and head down to the library, who could talk. Because the librarians not only are holding an event, but they also are just very knowledgeable about the subject. I mean, me and you are coming at this from just readers. They're in the business. So down there, if you hop online before going downstairs to the library on any of the campuses, there's a quiz about banned books. If you complete the quiz, you can go out to a librarian and get a special banned books bracelet. And also they have on display a bunch of different titles. So you can go ahead and pick up your Hunger Games, Where the Wild Things Are. I don't know if we have copies of George Takei's left or if we have them at all, because I can't find the list right now. But there is a list downstairs that I think there will be a book for everybody. So if everybody could just make it a goal, maybe this month, maybe next month, pick up a banned book, at least think about it, DM George Takei, say thank you so much. I think that would be a good time. If anybody has read any banned books in the last couple months and wants to come talk to us about it, on Monday and Wednesdays between 10:30 and 12 and Building 1, 218, we're here and we are ready to listen. So other than that, have a good day, and we will talk to you guys next week.